From VOA, Press Conference USA, here is your host, Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Joining me on the program is VOA diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain. Our special guest on this edition of the program is Will Pomerantz, Deputy Director of the Kennan Institute at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars. An impeachment inquiry into President Donald Trump continues apace in Washington as the House of Representatives Intelligence Committee holds hearings to understand the lead-up to and implications of a July 25th phone call between U.S. President Donald Trump and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. The inquiry centers on the question of whether President Trump suspended close to $400 million in U.S. military aid to Ukraine to pressure President Zelensky to investigate one of his political opponents, Joe Biden. Top U.S. diplomats and other foreign policy experts have said any threat to that U.S. security assistance sends the wrong signal both to Ukraine and to the stronger power it is fighting on its own soil, Russia. So what is going on with the assistance? What has been the effect of the delay in aid and possible withholding of remaining funds on Ukraine's ability to fight Russia? How does Russia benefit from the perception that the United States is wavering in its support for Ukraine? We'll ask our special guest, Will Pomerantz, who's the Deputy Director of the Kennan Institute at the Woodrow Wilson Center here in Washington, to assess the current political situation in Ukraine and the impact of these hearings on the U.S.-Ukraine relationship. He will also talk about the significance of Volodymyr Zelensky's ascension to power this year on a promise to end the conflict with Russia that has claimed thousands of lives in his country and become a flashpoint in relations between Moscow and the West. 6 months into Mr. Zelensky's presidency, efforts toward a lasting peace deal are inching forward, though many Ukrainians remain wary of Russia's motives. Mr. Zelensky said this week that Ukraine wants to negotiate a deadline at a December summit for the return of Ukraine's territories from Russia, which annexed the country's Crimean Peninsula in 2014. However, Russian President Vladimir Putin has made clear that he regards Ukraine to be an integral part of Russian territory. He said the nations are two parts of one and the same people. Meantime, Mr. Zelensky, only 41 years old and a political neophyte, faces resistance at home to his peace efforts. Many Ukrainians, including far-right nationalists, who came out in the thousands in recent weeks to protest the plan, are suspicious of Russia and fear that the president might cede too much to Moscow. Will Pomerantz recently returned from Kyiv and will share his observations and insights from that visit. Will Pomerantz joins us here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to the program.
Glad to be here.
And I'm delighted to welcome my colleague, VOA diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain.
My pleasure.
Will Pomerantz, first off, remind us once again why Ukraine is so important to the United States, to the West in general, especially since Russia's illegal annexation of Crimea in 2014 and its continued support for separatists in eastern Ukraine.
Well, Ukraine is very important to the United States from a variety of perspectives. First, from a strategic standpoint, the Soviet Union was a superpower because it included 280 million people. And an important segment of that 280 million people was Ukraine. So in terms of grand political strategy, the ability to separate Ukraine from Russia leaves Russia in a different political position. It doesn't have that strong southern base. It has a country that has expressed a desire to join the West, and the United States and Europe have tried to encourage steps toward the West. So Ukraine remains a very strategic country for the United States. The United States backed the sovereignty of Ukraine when the Soviet Union collapsed. It made sure that Ukraine was not a nuclear power, and in order to do so, it made certain promises through the Budapest Memorandum to defend Ukraine. So Ukraine has strategic importance. It also has a strong political diaspora in the United States. And that political diaspora is also able to exercise local politicians, congressmen, and senators in support for Ukraine as well.
Let's talk about the significance of Volodymyr Zelensky's election this year. It was seen as a fresh start to move more toward the West, while at the same time trying to reach some kind of a modus vivendi with this revanchist Russia.
Yes, it was a very important election. Ukraine, unlike other post-Soviet countries, has a tradition now of throwing out its political leaders. And this was another example of such a decision, that Poroshenko, who ran on patriotism, on language, on defending the army, suffered a significant defeat. And it was Zelensky, who really is, as you mentioned, a neophyte politician with no political record. Nevertheless, he was able to emphasize certain themes, most notably a desire somehow to find a resolution to the war in eastern Ukraine, which has resulted in at least 13,000 casualties. So Zelensky ran on a proposal of searching for peace, of introducing more institutional reforms, going after corruption. He had a very long list of campaign promises. The problem, as you said, is that he really isn't a politician at all. And the question is whether he can deliver on these promises.
Let me turn to my colleague Cindy Sane for a question.
Yes. You mentioned that Ukraine being involved in a hot war with Russian-backed separatists. Could you tell us a little bit about this U.S. security assistance for Ukraine, which seems to be at the center of impeachment hearings? What does that entail, and has that been a bipartisan-supported aid?
Yes, support for Ukraine, especially after the incursion and invasion by Russia in 2014 and the annexation of Crimea, has resulted in strong bipartisan support for Ukraine. And initially, the Obama administration was concerned about giving Ukraine lethal weapons, but over time, those objections have been overcome, and the United States has provided Ukraine with significant military assistance in order to fight Russia and the separatists in eastern Ukraine. So this has been a source of bipartisan support. Indeed, it's one of the few areas, I think, in the United States Congress that unites Republicans and Democrats. And so obviously the resulting controversy in this impeachment inquiry, where Republicans are now strongly objecting to the Democratic investigation and, in fact, are proposing alternative arguments as to how Ukraine might have been involved in the 2016 election campaign, has cast doubt on the ability to maintain this bipartisan support for Ukraine.
Yes, one of the things that has emerged through the testimony from some career State Department and Pentagon national security officials is that President Trump seems to hold a chronically negative view of Ukraine. Do you know why President Trump holds these views?
I don't want to try to go into the policy decisions in terms of how President Trump views Ukraine, but it is clear that he has held a bias. There are various conspiracy theories floating around social media that he seems to have bought into. And if you look at his broader foreign policy objectives that he announced when he ran for president, one of his goals was to have better relations with Russia. And obviously, events in Ukraine and the ongoing war in Ukraine and the resulting sanctions that the United States has imposed on Russia because of the war in Ukraine has not allowed President Trump to achieve that objective in terms of promoting better relations with Russia. So I think from his standpoint, the whole Ukrainian crisis is a thorn in his side in terms of trying to pursue his broader objectives, which was try to improve U.S.-Russian relations.
Will Pomerantz, let's talk about some of those career diplomats that have been testifying, as Cindy Sane said, one of whom is David Holmes. He's the political officer in the U.S. Embassy in Kiev. And he said that the apparent quid pro quo, that is, the granting of a White House meeting to President Zelensky and the release of security assistance being contingent on Ukraine investigating the 2016 elections and Ukraine investigating Biden, that could tend to weaken Ukraine because those kinds of conditions are political in nature and should not be a part of the White House meeting or granting congressionally approved military assistance.
I think this whole controversy does weaken Ukraine because it suggests that the U.S. support for Ukraine is conditional, is now more political, and isn't as
bipartisan
as it was beforehand. So I think that there is a sense that if President Trump believes these conspiracy theories, that if his government is divided, that he is actually conducting both an official and unofficial foreign policy vis-a-vis Ukraine, that is not to the advantage of Ukraine, which is, as you mentioned, in a war with Russia and Russian proxies, and is absolutely dependent on the United States for that assistance. So I think the actions of the Trump administration, both its informal and formal approaches towards Ukraine, gives a perception of a weakening of support for Ukraine, which only reverts to Russia's advantage.
And a question to you is, Mr. Trump apparently is concerned about corruption, but that is, in a sense, euphemism for alleged corruption by his political opponent, Biden, and his son. But nonetheless, if President Trump is so concerned about corruption, I don't believe that security assistance was withheld in the two previous years in which he was president. Are you aware if aid was withheld in two previous years?
I am not aware of aid being withheld. And the question of corruption and Ukraine's ability to fight corruption does not only involve the Trump administration. It is an important issue that goes back to the beginning of Ukraine's independence and the collapse of the Soviet Union. Because of a variety of reasons, institutional, economic, and so forth, Ukraine has had a significant amount of government corruption. And its ability to stem that corruption, to appoint government officials who can fight that corruption, has been limited. And so the discussions that have gone on, for example, about the prosecutor's office in Ukraine and the prosecutor's office's ability to fight corruption is an ongoing affair. It was one that Biden was engaged in, but it also predates Biden as well. These institutions have proven not to be in a position to fight the corruption that has developed in the post-Soviet Union and in Ukraine.
In terms of the corruption that we talk about in Ukraine, isn't it sort of a, some kind of an inheritance from its association with the Soviet Union, Russia?
It is an inheritance in the sense that the Soviet Union did not have institutions that were strong enough in the aftermath of the collapse of the Soviet Union to fight corruption. And so it was a free-for-all. Everyone talks about the wild, wild east in Russia after the collapse of the Soviet Union. But a similar situation occurred in Ukraine. And there was an ability for well-connected government people, well-connected oligarchs, to take control of significant state assets for really pennies on the dollar. And so this has been endemic throughout the post-Soviet space. And the United States and our European allies have tried to introduce various institutions in order to fight this corruption. When President Poroshenko, for example, assumed office, we insisted that Ukraine create an anti-corruption bureau, anti-corruption court, anti-corruption prosecutors, reform the police. This has been a central part of U.S. and European foreign policy. It just hasn't produced the results that one would have wanted.
Exactly. But of course, if Ukraine wants to be part of the West, it needs to continue to fight corruption. Whereas in Russia, being a dictatorship and an authoritarian regime, corruption goes forward without any concerns.
Well, ironically, Putin announces in virtually every State of the Nation address that he wants to fight corruption. The problem with corruption in Russia, similarly to Ukraine, but in Russia, corruption is the means by which to grease the wheels, keep Putin's systems going. What has been emphasized by Western funders is that Ukraine, if it wants to join the West, has to make a more concerted effort to root out this corruption.
We'll have more in just a moment, but first, you're listening to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our guest is Will Pomerantz, Deputy Director of the Kennan Institute at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars, and that's a think tank here in Washington. We're discussing the significance of the U.S.-Ukraine relationship in the wake of an impeachment inquiry into U.S. President Donald Trump. I'm Carol Castiel, along with VOA diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain. This is a reminder that our PCUSA podcast is available on our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. You may also follow us on Twitter or
Connect with us on Facebook at Carol Castiel VOA. Here's a shout out to a loyal fan, Shedi Dafiak Dabeng from Jos, Nigeria. If you want to hear your name and home country on the air, send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. And now a question from Cindy.
Yes, I am just curious, since you're just back from Ukraine, how is this whole impeachment drama playing out there? Are people watching? Are they even aware of it? What are average Ukrainians saying? And is President Zelensky being called upon to answer for some of the conversations that he allegedly had with President Trump?
Well, I think the Ukrainians are otherwise engaged, and I don't think they are gathering around their television sets to follow the testimony about what's going on in the United States. I think the concern in Ukraine is that the country is dragged into the impeachment crisis. That is of concern, that somehow it's seemed as agreeing either to investigate the Bidens or somehow upending the continued bipartisan support. So Zelensky has to walk this fine line of trying to separate himself from this impeachment investigation, but also maintaining relations so that the military aid continues. So I think what Ukraine is most concerned about is how Zelensky is able to walk back from the telephone call, where he doesn't really make too many open promises in terms of being engaged in the investigation. He makes a negative comment about the U.S. ambassador to Ukraine, but he generally doesn't really get too far messed up and engaged into this crisis. And I think that's what the people of Ukraine are most concerned about, that the Ukraine is not being perceived as being at the heart of this crisis and that aid and support continues to flow.
I noticed that when President Zelensky was here at the United Nations General Assembly meeting and had that little one-on-one with President Trump, that he, as a former comedian, he used a joke or used humor to say, well, thank you for inviting me to the White House, but I noticed that you forgot to tell me the date. And then there was laughter. How important is this White House meeting to him?
Well, I think it was important to him to shore up his domestic support, to show that the United States continues to back Ukraine, both militarily and in terms of its reform process. So clearly it was important for Zelensky to be engaged with the President of the United States. And so that's what he wanted to do. He wanted to show that there was continuity. He wanted to show that he was being taken seriously. And he wanted to show that his requests were being considered. Any politician would want that from the United States. And so that's why I think he was so concerned about having a meeting with the president.
And Will Pomerantz, let's go back to this so-called conspiracy theory that Mr. Trump seems to have bought into, which is basically Russian propaganda, that it was somehow Ukraine and not Russia that interfered in the 2016 U.S. elections. Recently, Fiona Hill, who is the former senior advisor on the U.S. National Security Council on Russia and Ukraine, she rebuked authoritatively this conspiracy theory that it was Ukraine that interfered in our elections and not Russia. It was clearly Russia. Talk about how the Ukrainians are reacting to this allegation.
I don't think they take it seriously at all. And I think that in light of Fiona Hill's testimony, I think that they will feel reassured that the United States, at least from a security standpoint, does not believe that it was Ukraine and not Russia that interfered in the U.S. elections. I don't think they can control all the political conspiracy theories that are out there, but I think they can be reassured that amongst the expert community, it is not giving any consideration to the idea that Ukraine was behind the electoral interference in 2016.
Well, they may be reassured, but we know for certain now that Mr. Zelensky and many of his advisors knew that there was a hold on security assistance and that the conditions for releasing that security assistance required them to do investigations. And investigations is a euphemism for not investigations against corruption in general, but really against Mr. Trump's political rival, Joe Biden, and his son Hunter, who was sitting on the board of the energy company Burisma. How did that play from your recent visit and talks with people? That is, they knew about it, contrary to what
Mr. Trump had said earlier. Now we have evidence that they knew that there was a hold. So the releasing of that aid just recently doesn't really mollify or mitigate the potential damage.
Right. I think that it's unclear whether there was any intention to dig deeper into Hunter Biden in response to what President Trump or Rudy Giuliani had asked. Whether they would have felt more pressure as time went on, it's difficult to speculate. I think what the Burisma and the Hunter Biden scandal has done most is that it's put Joe Biden on the defensive in the presidential primaries. And at some point, there is a recognition that maybe no laws have been broken. But I think it is having an impact in terms of people's understanding of Joe Biden and his potential support. So I think that issue is having bigger play in the United States than it is in Ukraine.
And I just want to interject that no evidence has surfaced whatsoever that Hunter Biden was doing anything untoward, as Rudy Giuliani, the attorney for President Trump, alleged.
These are all allegations that have not been proved, and therefore I think that it is, from a political standpoint, having an impact. And I don't anticipate that these criminal investigations are about to take place either in Ukraine or in the United States.
Will Pomerantz, let's take a look now at this upcoming meeting in December, talking about how to reach some kind of a ceasefire agreement between Russia and Ukraine. Talk about the prospects for that and the impediments, challenges.
Well, the Europeans have taken the lead. There's going to be what is called a Normandy summit that comes out of the Minsk agreements that will involve Russia, Ukraine, France, and Germany. What actually occurs at this negotiations is unclear. Both sides have certain demands that they believe are important to fulfill, either to lead up to any sort of agreement or what must occur in the aftermath of any sort of agreement. So the Ukrainians are demanding that there be elections in Donetsk and Luhansk and that they be conducted under Ukrainian law. The likelihood of that happening is small. They also insist that Ukraine should take control of its eastern border. That is also unlikely to occur without some serious negotiations. Finally, the Russians have not given up on their demand that if indeed Luhansk and Donetsk are to stay a part of Ukraine, they need to have special status within Ukraine. And from a political standpoint, it is very hard to see how President Zelensky can agree to incorporate these two regions back into Ukraine under special status. So these are all serious problems that have not been overcome, that have to be negotiated, that will be a test of strength for President Zelensky and a source of leverage for President Putin. So it is a good thing that they are actually meeting. There have been some exchange of prisoners. There have been some partial pullbacks. Again, 13,000 Ukrainians have died as a result of this war. So Zelensky is committed to trying to find a peaceful resolution to it. The question is, are the demands too high from the Russians or from the separatists that an agreement simply is not possible?
Well, Pomerantz, do you think this controversy over Ukraine is going to strengthen Moscow's hand at the December 9 meeting?
Well, I think Moscow comes to the meeting with a strong hand because from Moscow's perspective, the eastern parts of Ukraine are leverage. And it's not investing huge amounts of money in order to maintain significant leverage over the resolution of this crisis. So I think Moscow and the Kremlin will seek maximum advantage. And that would mean trying to find a way to undermine Ukraine and Ukraine's unity in any sort of settlement.
Will there be a U.S. representative at this meeting?
I do not believe so. And the United States has purposely stayed out of these types of negotiations. It has assumed that the Europeans would take the lead since this is occurring in Europe's backyard. And clearly, President Trump is not interested in taking the lead, and his statement suggests that he wants, the Russians and the Ukrainians to come to some sort of agreement on their own.
Have you heard about this press report that indicates that the Javelins, which are so important to the Ukrainians to combat Russian aggression, that they're being supplied by the Trump administration on the condition that they not be used in combat against the Russian separatists?
I have not heard that allegation.
Okay. Let's take a look at what's the reaction by Ukrainians. I had said in my introduction that there have been reports of protests against these negotiations with Russia for fear that somehow President Zelensky might cede too much. Talk about the reaction in general, and particularly by the far-right nationalists.
There's opposition to Zelensky, not only from the far-right, but from everyday politicians who fear that if Zelensky follows through, that this will be a capitulation to Russia. So it's not simply the far right in Ukraine that is opposed to these negotiations. These negotiations will have political resonance throughout the political spectrum and will be used by other politicians to attack Zelensky and to say that he is giving away too much. So I think this is not simply a far right phenomenon in Ukraine. This is a question of a country that's been at war for several years, whose president now, President Zelensky, wants to make peace. That was a crucial part of his platform. And will the terms of any such peace be acceptable to a majority of the Ukrainian population? And I don't know the answer to that question yet.
Can you surmise what the bottom line or the minimum that the Ukrainians would accept as some kind of a resolution for this conflict? What's the minimum that they would accept?
We still need to find that out. For President Zelensky, he wants the country brought back together, to be unified, and to have Ukrainian law and sovereignty be reestablished. I think that is the ultimate goal for President Zelensky. From the start, he's not going to get Crimea back, so that's just not going to happen. So he's already not going to be able to fulfill all of his promises and goals. And the question is, if he actually is able to reintegrate the eastern republics of Luhansk and Donetsk, how much is it going to cost? How much resources will have to be given to those regions? Because they have been devastated economically, in terms of infrastructure. The Russians will not pay to rebuild eastern Ukraine. That money will have to either come from Ukraine itself or from Western assistance. And it will be a significant amount of money. And the question becomes is how much can Ukraine afford and how much is it willing to pay to reintegrate these regions into the country?
How pivotal is the United States in these negotiations going forward? And how much damage do you think has been done given this controversy and the fact that President Trump is under this impeachment cloud and somehow doesn't still see Ukraine in a positive light personally?
So the United States obviously plays a critical role because it is a major supporter of Ukraine. It is providing military assistance. It is providing economic assistance. But don't underestimate the Europeans as well. I mean, it was the whole question about Ukraine signing a EU association agreement that started this whole crisis to begin with. And the EU has given also significant economic aid to Ukraine. So the United States plays a critical role, but if a solution is found, the Europeans will have to play an important role as well in order to resolve this crisis.
Are you confident that they have the strength, the political will, because they're also dealing with far-right parties and so forth?
Again, this is an open discussion. No one can predict whether the Europeans, which often talk about the notion of Ukraine fatigue, will be able to see this crisis through. And there's also a question that if indeed there is a preliminary solution to this crisis, and that's a big if already, does the EU decide then to lift some of the sanctions against Russia? Because one of the crucial parts of the united policy against Russia in the aftermath of the annexation of Crimea was that the EU and the United States have introduced similar sanction programs in terms of going after Russian financial institutions, Arctic drilling, etc. But what happens if indeed there is a breakthrough in Normandy and the Europeans decide to reward Russia by lifting some of these sanctions? Then we have this awkward situation where the United States has full-blown sanctions as articulated in 2014, and the Europeans are beginning to lessen their sanctions. So how does the united front between the EU and the United States hold if indeed from the EU's perspective there's been a breakthrough and it wants to change its sanctions regime. There are many players, many moving parts, and the one thing that you can say is that no one really knows how it's all going to resolve itself.
Will Pomerantz is Deputy Director of the Kennan Institute at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars. Will, thanks for coming in, shedding light on U.S. ally Ukraine as it seeks to combat Russian aggression.
My pleasure.
Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced in Washington, and joining me on the program was VOA diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain. Thanks to Kim Lewis for booking our guest. Our engineer was Rick Pantaleo. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.